Hello and welcome back to another instalment of Cycling Mo, your cycling informant. Today I am delighted to be joined by Jasper Stuyven of Trek Segafredo. Jasper, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Now, we are going to look at your top 10 cycling moments. Some really good ones in there, got me thinking as well when you sent me the list. We're going to take them in chronological order. So we will start at the very beginning, which was 2014 Paris-Roubaix, your first season as a pro. Why did you include this in your top 10 moments?
For me, because there's a few reasons. It was the end of my first classics period, the first year. And it was really nice to see how I moved up in the ranks, let's say. The first classics was E3. Where I had to follow the early break and then position Fabian as long as possible. And then in Flanders, I could save myself a little bit longer. And then even in Roubaix, I could save myself until Arenberg, let's say. And I was there in the race for a very long time. And I still believe that I think because I was able to pull for pretty long, that that kept the podium possibilities for Fabian alive that day. And at the same time, it gave me, of course, a big boost to realize that I could be able to ride a final in the coming years in Roubaix.
Now, you were a former winner of the junior edition. Just how much of a step up is it from junior under 23 Roubaix to the real thing?
The nice thing about that, or nice, is that on the sector that I attacked when I was junior, I got dropped in 2014. So it's just the fatigue is so much higher because the distance is there. It's nervous. It didn't come as a surprise. I was not expecting an easy step up, but of course, riding Flanders, E3, and Roubaix, you really feel and realize that how much it takes out of your body.
And what was it like riding for the legend that is Fabian Cancellara?
Impressive. I mean, we won Flanders the week before, my first monument with Fabian, and immediately winning it. So it's something that was on the bucket list of achieving. So yeah, it was we were the favorites again for Roubaix, and it was really nice to get the confidence from Fabian that he wanted me to. Yeah, be ready later in the race, and because I think I showed the races before, I was pretty good in knowing the roads and putting him in the right position.
Second memory is 2015, the following year, right at the end of the season, the Vuelta a España, stage 8, I think it was, into Murcia, and it was your first professional victory.
Exactly, so I think for sure that should be in the top 10. Yeah, it was a difficult year. I didn't have a successful classics year. I think it was the year that I crashed in Strade and missed out on a lot of classics. And yeah, there was never a really nice result that year. And then I was going into the Vuelta. And yeah, that day, I would say not everything went perfect because I had to go home after the stage because I broke my scaphoid during the stage. But I think it's the first victory as a pro at the World Tour level. It was a nice victory, and it was actually how I always imagined of winning a stage in a Grand Tour. It's not from a pure sprint, but a hard climb that I almost not make it over myself. But if I do, I think my chances get bigger of getting a nice result. And that day it worked out.
Yeah, for those that don't remember, it was classic Spain, classic Vuelta, kind of Cat 2, Cat 3 climb, right quite close to the end. You were, as you mentioned there, you were hanging on, you were last man over the climb. And then there was lots of crashes. I think Sagan crashed in the run for home.
Yeah, it was a Cat 2 climb that we did twice with a really technical downhill. There were some crashes left and right in the downhill as well. Then Sagan got hit by a motorbike, if I remember well, at 7 or 8 from the finish. And the group wasn't that big anymore. So yeah, it was, we were still there with three or four guys who tried to keep that little bunch together so I could do the sprint.
And your sprint was, you came from quite deep, if I remember correctly. I think Kaya Rual were leading out and you...
Yeah. I was in a good position, but then, there was, some guys came with speed from behind. Which was not ideal, but then I had time enough or space enough, let's say, to start my sprint and to come around.
You mentioned that 2015 was tough. Getting that win right at the end of the season, that must have been nice to set you up for the next year.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's important to win if that's a goal, for at least. So it was nice to go. I mean, I was hoping to go to Worlds that year. So of course that was a disappointment to not make it again. But it was nice to have that win, and it also motivated me actually to keep training, because at the end of the season I still did a few races where I actually was still pretty good. Of course, with a win in the pocket, it's nicer to motivate yourself to train fast and get on the rollers and trainers and make yourself suffer to get the best out of it.
And that leads perfectly into your next moment, which was 2016, Kuurne versus Kuurne, which was just one of those classic KBK type races where you attack with about 17 kilometers to go and manage to hold them all off. That was a pretty strong.
Yeah, that was a really good day. I was quite strong the day before, but I made some tactical mistakes and even came in quite too fast in one of the corners and went down. But the sports directors really told me to believe in myself for the day after, because I was really strong the day, and then in Kuurne, Brussels Kuurne, the wind would be all day from the side, which they convinced me it would be a hard day. And everything went perfect. Perfect race, I think. I had really, really good legs, and of course it helped that it was in the classic, so that's why I think it's a really nice moment.
You had a very strong Boy Van Poppel, I think, that day as well, in the front group with yourself, and he did a lot of work to set up your attack.
Yeah, exactly. There was a group going in the beginning, 10 guys, and I think actually said to Boy Van, jump. I think it's good to have you there. And he did, and like you say, it turned out pretty well, because he... He did a lot of work in the bigger group to keep the gap big enough to the peloton, and even after that he kind of set it up pretty good by putting everyone a little bit in the wind again before I launched my attack.
Now, for those who don't remember, you were chased by a group of six, like Bonin, Van Avermaet, Nason, Rowe. The peloton were behind, chasing for Orica, Lotto, Katusha. But when you attacked and then went a couple of kilometres later, you seemed to be so strong. There didn't actually seem to be any kind of doubt for me watching the race that you weren't going to win. How good were you that day?
I was pretty good that day. I think sometimes you have one of those days, and it's nice that you can win on those days, because I think that's also... something that isn't easy, to the days that you feel really good and that you are really strong, that you manage to get a result or to get the win. That day I just was able to keep pushing and don't allow them to come back.
And was it also nice, I mean, you were young, what were you, 23? You were leader as well for one of the first times in kind of semi-classics like that. Was that also important to say to the team, yeah, I can do this?
Of course. I think the day before they also wrote for me and for Edward Teuns. It's nice that when you lead a team that I could show that I also can win the races. So I think it's important to show that you're in contention to win.
Then we go same year, 2016, Tour de France, your first Tour de France, stage two. Was it always the plan to go for the break?
Well, it wasn't. It was one of the stages I pointed out before that it could be a break. All depends on what happened the day before. And for me, it all came kind of together because Fabian wanted to ride that day and try to go for it, for the result. The problem was that Eddie was in white, so he was protected as well to try to keep it. And then for me, when I looked at it, Kev was leading, so I was already convinced they were not going to pull because it was too hard to finish for him. And then the rain and the smaller roads, I knew was also going to be in an advantage for me because behind, it's always nervous. They're fighting. They were going to be crashes. And yeah, so I thought, why not give it a try? And yeah, it almost worked out. It's in the top 10, but it's, at the same time, it's also, I think, by far the biggest disappointment in my career.
It was looking good. I mean, it was 2 minutes with about 9K to go, but then you had that real hard climb towards the end. And I mean, how far out were you caught? It was inside the final kilometer, I think.
Yeah, it was 450 meters to go. But for me, the guys I was with, Voss and the Norwegian guy, I don't remember his name now. Sorry for that. but we lost a lot of time on one of the small kickers before because we were looking, we were not going full. And I think if I would have the experience or one of the team directors would have told me to talk with them and just commit to go to the end and then see what happens, we could have made it. And if you look back to the stage, I think we give away 1 minute on one of the small kickers before our attack. And I mean, even if from that 1 minute is only 30 seconds left, then I make it till the end. So it makes it really bittersweet.
Not the last time we'll talk about a Tour de France near win. next year, 2017, Paris-Roubaix. So you finish fourth. You were away with Daniel Oss attacking. Was that before Monzon-Pavel? Very strong race. Your best performance probably in a Roubaix. Why is that one in your top 10?
Because I came into the classics with a really, really good feeling. I remember the Tuesday before Heidelberg, I think I never felt that good before and ready. And then from E3 on, everything went wrong. I felt there was something in my body and we couldn't find what the problem was. And I was just suffering. I couldn't perform. Yeah, it was really, really hard to keep believing in it. And then, we did find out that I was like, I had a problem in the intestines and the stomach going on. And then I was still able to get a good result in Roubaix. So I felt like the Thursday before Roubaix that my body was starting to recover and I started to feel better. But not 100% yet, and then still with not feeling 100% with so many doubts, it was a big relief and satisfaction at the same time to get this nice result in Roubaix. Yeah.
And does it feel like you're getting closer to that win?
Yeah, as well. At that point, I was for me and also to the rest, it showed like there was something wrong because a lot of people didn't believe it and. Also, it confirmed the feeling that I had that I was ready to compete the finals in the classics if I would be on a healthy level.
Next moment, 2018, the following year, back to the Tour de France, back to another breakaway, stage 14 to Mende, which finished with a very, very difficult climb, and you almost made it again. So close. What do you remember of that day?
There, it's if I have to put it together or next to each other to the next to the other tour stage, where 2016 is one of the biggest disappointments. That one isn't. I think that day I was incredible strong. If you look to the numbers I pushed, were really amazing. And I did everything right that day. But if the climb is too hard, at the end, the climb is too hard. If there are climbers behind who go from the bottom instead of looking to each other, then, I mean, it didn't... Sometimes you need the luck. And that day, I didn't have the luck that they looked... that I was hoping for, that they would look to each other behind. But everything else, I did perfect. I had a really, really good day. I think it was... a risky move, but it was the way I had to do it that day, and I went all in, and I think that's the most important, to go all in. And of course, I would like to still hunt that tour stage victory, but the way I'm trying to achieve them are not the easiest ways to get them.
So for those that don't remember, it was a break of 32 men, full of amazing climbers, Alaphilippe, Ferreira, who won the stage, Sagan himself was there, and you attacked with Izaguirre and Slakta with a long way to go, and then they kind of argued with each other, and you just poof, and you were gone.
Yeah, exactly. I jumped on the top of a small climb before, because Izaguirre and Slakta went already. And already with them, I was feeling really, really good. But Slakta was on the limit, apparently. And he didn't pull really... Yeah, he was not committed. Or didn't feel like he was committed. And, of course, like you say, Izaguirre started to argue with him one time, two times. And at one point, even I didn't notice it. I was just pulling through, and there was a small gap. And if I would have taken Izaguirre to the bottom of the climb, I also would have been beaten. But now I had the chance to leave him behind already, and I just went for it. And from there on, I think it was 35 alone. I went all in.
And then you're on the climb. The crowds are incredible. You know they're coming. I'm sure you're told in your ear they're coming. And I think you got to about 400 meters before the top of the climb, and Fraley goes past you. It must be. You said it's not as disappointing as the previous one, but it must be heartbreaking.
It is, and it was. And even I was, I think it was 400 or 300 meters from the top, but it only needed to be, I think, 150 meters closer to the top, because there was flattening out, was more flattened to the top. And if I would have made it until there, I was able to still get the power and get it going again. The part before was just so steep, there was no way of even thinking, try to hang on with Freile. And if he would have caught me that 150 meters later, there was no way he was going to drop me. It is what it is. And it was pretty painful. It might looked on TV, or might have looked on TV that I blew up, but I actually never blew up. I still there after one hour alone. I pushed again, still quite impressive numbers for 20 minutes or almost 20 minutes on that climb. It wasn't enough. So people ask me why didn't you try to go with Freire when he passed you, but he was also smart. He made a small acceleration on a steep part on the moment he passed me. So there was no thinking for me to even try. If it was later on, yeah, no problem when it flattens out, but it was not the case yet.
Then we go, same year, we go to, I've just written down perfection in my notebook, Bink Bank Tour, Ardoy sprint stage, and you and your teammates just nail the final 2-3 kilometers, and you get the little gap in the kind of chicane section, and it was, what, about 1k full gas, and just hung on for the win in front of Caleb Ewan. What do you remember of that one?
Yeah, well, I did Vingbank a few times, and every time Ardoje, it's after that corner, there's so much chaos. Teams, guys who lost the lead out guys, lead out guys that are waiting. It's always a little bit hesitating there, or most of the times. And yeah, the first day it was not going really, really good, and we didn't have the team to win a bunch sprint. And actually, the evening before, or in the bus already towards the hotel, the day before, I said to the guys, "This is what we're gonna do tomorrow. We have a team tomorrow. We're gonna do it like this. This is exactly my plan, and it's gonna work." So everyone started to believe in this. We talked about it, you know, and everyone, yeah, there was this really belief that we could do it. And as you have written down, perfection, on the big road towards the traffic lights to the right, the teams were fighting, and we came at the last moment from behind, everyone together. The guys who were pulling Markel, Guerrero, and even Matias for one moment there, they didn't do an all-out pull and go out. They managed to do a 90% pull, get it back in the wheel, so they were able to pull after again 15 seconds to bring Ryan and Matias even further up the road to make it happen. And that's what they did. And then having guys like Brendlin and Mullen, you just need to motivate them that it's a drag race to that corner, and that we want them to be first there. And they love that kind of stuff. And yeah, it was perfect. Okay, I still needed to finish it off, and it was a really, really hard final K. But I think the way you win you win races is always gives a lot of extra emotion or memories to it. And that's one of the moments that is really a team victory, and I like those moments.
Did you look back at all, or did you just go head down? When was the first time you had a little look to see?
I think the first time I looked back was 500 to go, if I remember well. Okay. And then I looked back a few more times, but with 500 to go, I'm not gonna say I was sure I was gonna win, but I didn't have the feeling I was just completely gonna blow up. Anyway, you still keep going till the line to be sure, but it was a pretty hard final K.
And then we go forward a year to 2019. So last year, the Deutschland Tour, you had been disappointed not to be selected for the Worlds. You go there. Did you have a point to prove? Was that something that was in your mind? Or
At that point, I wasn't. I didn't know. I mean, the selection was only made Quebec and Montreal for Belgium. So it was time to prove that I was ready for Worlds.
The disappointment came after.
Deutschland, yeah, it's a GC win. Something is not apart from maybe aiming at Vingbank. There's not a lot of opportunities for a rider like me to win GCs. So it was a different feeling, and I also noticed that the last day how I was struggling to deal with the stress that day. Something new, something I never had before. So, I was surprised that it was so different than leading the team into a one-day race.
Why do you think that is? What is the difference between GC leader and a stage race compared to a one-day?
Good question. Maybe it's just too much in my head, but it's about controlling. You need to really think about who can you let go, who... Yeah, you start to think about different scenarios that other teams might have to try to break you. But there's more than one team, there's more than one rider who can still beat you. A lot of thinking, maybe overthinking as well, that comes into play. But it's not about tactic. I mean, I'm not going to say one day race isn't about tactics, but... in a GC, it's you need to know who's close to you. You need to really think what their ideas are to beat you, all that, and then you need to trust your team that they are strong enough to support you as well.
You won the race basically on stage three with a big, big attack with about 3K to go. I think you went over, was it Mass and maybe one other rider? And Askren managed to get across to you, but you finished second, you took a big lead. That attack was, that was something special. That seemed to be big.
Yeah, it's a bit, I mean, I didn't want to get in a position that they, that I was maybe too confident in my sprint. And I mean, I know I can have a good good final stretch towards the finish. That's how I've been winning some of my races, to ride aggressive and not playing the waiting game. I wanted to take that advantage and try, and I saw a good moment, and I just put in a big attack and see where till where we go, and went quite okay.
Your next moment is a race that you didn't race. So 2019 World Championships, as we just mentioned there, you didn't get selected, but you kind of know the guy who won.
Exactly, and I mean, that's we started actually with 2014. You know, bucket list was winning a monument, or myself, or with the team. But on that bucket list is also having a world champion in the team, and then. It happens to be one of my best friends who won the race. I wasn't planning on watching the race, but at the end I did, and I'm happy that I did. I can for the same reason, like I maybe could have also written down the stage that Eddie won in Bing Bang or in Panis, where I'm really happy with the victory of a teammate, because we all worked for it really hard. But of course, the world's winning the world championship, winning that jersey, the rainbow jersey, being a really good friend of you, of me, was something that is definitely in my top 10. It's a moment I won't forget soon.
Did you think he would win the sprint?
To be honest, yes. I think I put out a tweet at 5K to go or 3K to go. Because a lot of people were like, yeah, Trentin is a world champion. Everyone was sure he was going to be world champion. And I think it was really close to the final that I made a tweet like, for everyone interested, like, he's not slow after such a day, I'm actually quite happy I did that tweet, because it really proved how I not only believed in him, but I also know him, what he's capable of. And I don't think a lot of people thought he would pull it off.
And then we have one more moment, which was this season before the world stopped, Umloopet Nieuwsblad, a big, big victory for you.
Yeah, of course. I think you can even rewind a little bit to 2018, where there was not one moment, but I just had a really good classic season. Just the victory or the big podium was missing. Then I had a lot of expectations for 2019, where everything that could go wrong went wrong. There's a lot of pressure, not only for myself, also from the outside, to make it better in 2020. And I was confident that I was going to be ready. I had a really, really good preparation. Everything went well. I was feeling really good. And then that day is also, again, one of those days where it was important to motivate everyone, to get everyone ready, to maybe inspire them. Everyone was really ready that day. Everyone was committed. And that was necessary, I think, to show everyone that we we were back, that the 2019 was not the normal way of Trek Segafredo. And I'm really happy that that day when, again, I had really good legs, but also the team did a wonderful job that day, and we showed that we were there as a team and that we were strong.
You covered a few moves and were in a few moves, and then the crucial one went, and I think you were actually the last to make the move from the peloton. Was it something you just sensed, or did you think, we just need a body in this move?
I was not planning on jumping. I was actually in the radio saying to the guys that we needed to be in that move because I saw that all the bigger teams were jumping. But at that point, I didn't know that Alex Kirsch crashed like 100 meters before. So I just realized, okay, if I don't jump myself now, we're going to be in the defensive, and then we have to pull because we have been so in front all day that they're going to look at us if you are not in that group.
Was it nice that it seemed like there was a good kind of relationship in the breakaway? There was no kind of silly attacks. It seemed maybe the presence of De Klerk there, because he was going to pull. It seemed like everybody was agreed, we'll just wait till the Mur.
Yes, only on the Molenberg, Søren Krau tried to spice things up. For me, it was too far to really go from there. Also, immediately, Yves said, I'm waiting for Tim, which would only have made it easier for Yves if we would have gone full, because then he would sit on just to play in the car that Tim was still coming back. For me, I didn't see any reason to go earlier. And then you also have the big road still towards the Mur. It was perfect to keep the group going, and also having Tim there, you would know that on the moments that we would slow down, he would be the one to pick the speed up and do the longer pulls, which he did, which was in favor of all of us.
And how did it feel smashing up the Mur in a race like this?
Good. It was nice to really make the acceleration there. I think it's one of the nice images to see even myself next to each other, just going balls out to the top and let's say a little show off to each other. Like, I'm strong. I know you might be strong as well, but I'm strong too. So I think it was really nice. And of course, at that point, the sun was coming again, but it had been a quite cold and rainy day before. So it's always hard to tell how much we suffered from that. It's a big, it has some history, the Mur. So it's nice to be up there and making the race and the final.
And as you race towards the finishing line, yourself and Yves Lampaert looked as just about as strong as each other. And there came a moment when he attacked, put in his big attack, and you covered it. It looked relatively easily on TV. Was that the point where you thought, yeah, I've got this one?
I think it's because I also was planning to attack myself on that point that I was really ready to jump on the wheel. But I think I'm not going to say it was an easy moment, but I didn't go all out to catch him there. I didn't have the feeling I was the one who barely made it back, and that I needed the most recovery. So the way I was able to catch him back, of course, gave me some confidence. But to be honest, I was never sure that I was going to win it.
So we've talked through your top 10 moments. What's missing? What's still on the bucket list?
Oh, of course, winning winning some other classics, winning a monument. To be honest, I also would love to win a TTT and winning a Grand Tour at one point in my career. Those three things are still there. That I know that are there. Of course, I want to keep winning races and be competitive, and to say really things that would be in there if I would have won them. That's definitely those three.
And a Tour de France stage from the break.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be from the break, of course. To be honest, I also still, I'm a little bit disappointed that I came close to be a rider that won a stage in every Grand Tour. The Tour was one, and then, I mean, the Tour that I would have had all the leaders' jerseys makes you think like, yeah, that's maybe something I would love to have. Still, the chance that I had to be a winner of a stage in every Grand Tour is bigger than the chance I maybe had to be or the will that I have to be a race leader in a Grand Tour.
Well, that will hopefully keep you motivated for some time to come.
Yeah, it's good to think, remind myself of those goals every 5 minutes when I'm on the trainers trying to survive this lockdown.
Well, come the end now. If you enjoyed this podcast, please remember to rate, review and subscribe. Jasper, thank you very much for giving up your time. I hope everybody appreciated it.
You're welcome. Thanks.